Everybody online there. Sorry, we're getting started late. I was waiting for our chair, our vice chair, to log in. And so I'm Matt Mahoney. I'm the Public Works Director here at Benton County, and I also serve as the secretary on the SLAC committee or on the SLAC. So I see other people coming in. So I'll go ahead right now, and if one of them jumps on, I will leave it to them. But in the meantime, I'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. It is 10:06, and the first order of business is to do a roll call. So I know we have a sign-in sheet. We have some people that I just see phone numbers. So what I'm going to ask everybody to do, I'm just going to say the county or the city, and if somebody will just say their name and who they're representing. So first off, I see Will McKay is not on. Commissioner McKay with Benton County. Again, I'm present, Matt Mahoney. City of Benton City.
Right here.
Okay. What's your name?
Lynn Burton.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn. City of Kennewick.
Here.
Chuck Torelli.
Chuck Torelli is. Anybody else from the city of Kennewick?
Jim won't be here today.
City of Prosser?
It's kind of me. I'm under citizen, but I live in Prosser, so
Yeah.
I do report to the city council.
Okay, so Don Aubrey is the member. I don't see him on.
Nope.
City of Richland. Anybody from the city of Richland? City of West Richland? Richard Bloom, are you on? Let me ask this, all of you that are online, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
All right, I don't see anybody here from, I'll go ahead, Basin Disposal. And we have Waste Management, but I know that's WM now.
Yeah, WM, Zach Stavros, filling in for Tammy Yeager.
Oh, Rebecca just joined the call. So.
All right, so Rebecca's on with BDI. And then we have you as a public citizen. Cindy is here. Thank you, Cindy. Our agricultural representative, Anthony Searles, are you? Is there anybody filling in for Anthony Searles with the as an agricultural representative? The Benton County Conservation District.
Thank you.
Kara, are you on?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And then I see Michelle is on. Thank you, Michelle. And with that, I'm just going to look up at the screen there. Good morning, Rebecca. And Ethan, if you could just give us your name, position, who you're with.
Yeah, my name is Ethan Bean. I'm the statewide moderate risk waste coordinator for the Department of Ecology.
Great. Thanks, Ethan. And I don't see, do you see anybody else?
I got them all written down. I've got Tyler McKay, Rebecca Brannick, Mark Chynester, Carrie Ebler, Ethan Bean, Michelle Mulroney.
Yeah, and Martin walked in and sitting next to you, Martin Nelson.
Richard Bloom just joined.
How are you doing, Richard?
All right.
I went ahead and started. We did roll call, so do you want to take over?
Okay, I guess I am.
So now the roll call is done. We're down to number three, public comment.
Anyway, do we have any public?
This discussion that we had before.
Yeah,
If you're online, just go and raise your hand.
Well, I have two things. Richard, you and I were supposed to go see Batteries Plus tour, and I
Yeah.
read that until I was going over the minutes, and I was like, well, I totally forgot that because we had our river cruise during this time period, and when you go on vacation, you forget everything. So I brought some batteries myself from home, and I'm going to stop by Batteries Plus on the way to Windhoe to go shopping after this meeting and see what happens. I don't know if you had a chance to go in and talk to him.
I've been trying to move into my new house. That's
So
one of the reasons I'm online.
I will report back what I find out from my little visit. I I asked my husband to give us, because people give me batteries just because they know I try to recycle them. But I have some bigger computer batteries and some hearing aid batteries, so a variety of things, so we can get some input about what batteries they take and what they're doing with them, because that was something we had a question on last time.
Okay, sounds good. Let's see what else we have on the. Come on. I have a dog that's trying to jump into the meeting. I pulled some muscles in my back and sort of put me on some pills that make me not want to go drive anywhere. So got the agenda pulled up, but I can't find it. There it is. It's missing.
Next is approval of the agenda.
Okay. All right. And do I have a motion to approve the agenda? If I could find it. Oh, that's because that's it.
Well, me and Chris put the agenda together, but I'll move for the approval of the agenda.
I'll second it. This is Francic.
All right.
Okay. We have an agenda. There it is. Just took me a while to find it on my laptop. All right. Well, the agenda says introductions. Did you do that before I came?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Hazardous Waste event, October 28th. Or do I have the wrong agenda?
No, we're on. Which is approval of the agenda. You have a motion by myself and a second by Rebecca Francic for approval of the agenda.
Yes, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I would guess it's covered. Still trying to.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for you.
And sure.
Speaking out of order. Are you comfortable with just turning it over to Matt, because he's right here and has all that stuff in front of him, and you're trying to get a bunch of things together at once? Plus, you're medicated. So
I'll turn it over to Matt.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, next we have approval of the minutes from our previous meeting for March 12th of 2025. I do want to let everybody know that we're not doing a verbatim minutes, but me and Chris do try to pick up on some very specific things. So if you're looking for verbatim, we do have the recording. So so now I'm just asking for approval as...
Move to approve the meeting minutes.
Okay, so we have a motion for approval and a second?
Yes.
Francic seconds.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? All right, hearing no discussion. All in favor of approval of the March 12, 2025 minutes, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, that motion is approved. And so we didn't really have any action items, which was item number 6. And I do want to be respectful of Department of Ecology's time. We do have Ethan here to talk to us. One of the discussions that happened at the last meeting was lithium ion batteries and the collection of those. And so Michelle was kind enough to ask Ethan to come on and kind of have a conversation with all of us about that. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Ethan.
All right, thank you. I haven't used WebEx before, so I'm going to try to screen share, and please bear with me if I'm messing things up.
As you may have to say,
can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. It just says connecting while I'm trying to share my content, so hopefully it works.
Ethan, while you're trying to connect your content, I'd like to jump in and just say that I attended Ecology's Organics Workshop meeting in Spokane, and it was very interesting and will merit some discussion when you're done with your presentation, which I see you have up.
All right. I'm excited for that conversation. All right. Thank you all for letting me join today. Michelle asked if I could talk a little bit about lithium ion batteries. Sounded like there was some concern about managing them at your MRW facility, and that makes sense. They're a hot topic these days, no pun intended. I saw on the Benton County MRW ops plan that the current intention is to tell the public to go to Batteries Plus, and based off the little side conversation at the beginning, it sounds like that's still the plan. I called them out of curiosity to see if they charge anything for it and how much. And they do charge $1 per pound for lithium ion batteries. And if the battery is visibly damaged, then they charge $15.75 per damaged battery to dispose of those. Nothing about that necessarily seems unreasonable to me. But if you all are wanting to continue considering whether you want to accept these batteries at your MRW facility, I just wanted to provide some additional information. These batteries are becoming more and more prevalent. They're relatively low cost. They've got a pretty high energy output for their size, and they're useful in so many different devices, as you can see in this list here. It's not all inclusive, but it's just a quick list of some common places you might find them. Hopefully you all can see my mouse. These batteries here are pouch cells. This is what you might find in a cell phone. The one on the left here that the mouse is on is a normal one. And this one that's kind of expanded out, this is like those damaged batteries that Batteries Plus would be probably charging that extra $15.75 per fee to dispose of. They're also in laptops, vape devices, electronic transportation devices. So if you all have like the e-scooters and e-bikes going around in your county, that's probably what's powering those portable chargers. These are photos of my personal tool batteries. I just took them at home. DeWalt drill, and then this powers my lawnmower and weed trimmer, headphones, so many other things. Basically, if it's a small rechargeable battery operated device, it's very likely that it's being charged by a lithium ion battery. If you all do continue down that process and you want to figure out how to store them, here are some considerations for how you might do so. They need to be stored in a dry place. Lithium reacts violently with water. There are stories that float around about firefighters trying to put out lithium ion batteries from electric vehicles and spraying water on it, and it just makes the reaction even worse. They need to be stored away from extreme temperatures and separate from flammables. Again, if it ends up going into a reaction, having it near flammables could only make the situation worse. Good ventilation. If they end up in some sort of chemical reaction, a lot of off-gassing can happen, and having ventilation can keep that from building up. Ease of access for emergency personnel, pretty straightforward. And then away from areas of increased impact risk. And that is strictly due to the fact that lithium ion batteries, if they become punctured, that can be what leads to the thermal runaway events, which are basically just the battery is reacting and having an uncontrolled release of heat and gases. There are several companies that make special storage containers and buildings for lithium ion batteries. So if you wanted to store them at your MRW facility, those are definitely options. I can provide these slides to Michelle, and I've got in the notes for this slide here some links that I found in just about a 20-minute Google search. It's definitely not an endorsement of any specific brands, but it's just what I found in a quick search. The next question is it necessary to provide public collection, or what happens if public collection isn't provided for lithium ion batteries? As I'm sure you all are probably aware, RCW 70A300-350 requires local governments to come up with a plan or program to manage moderate risk wastes that are generated within that area. And lithium ion batteries, especially generated by small quantity generators and households, definitely fit into that moderate risk waste definition. And so it doesn't require you all to have collection, but it requires you to have a plan or program to manage it. And it seems that with instructing the public to take their batteries to Batteries Plus, that is a plan. And as I mentioned earlier, the charges, the $1 per pound for non-damaged batteries or $15.75 for damaged batteries, to me, that doesn't seem unreasonable. Number three does require you to make some sort of coordination with those private services if you're going to encourage the public to take and use them. Some additional questions to consider, just meant to be more so rhetorical, are these batteries already showing up at your material recovery facilities, your transfer stations, landfills in Benton County? And if they are, what are staff doing with those? Are they pulling those out and managing them already? Because if that's the case, maybe you're already managing them and you could just purposely do it at your MRW facility. And then if you do choose to accept at your MRW facility, is there a chance that that would decrease what's showing up if they're showing up at your MRFs, transfer stations and landfills? Because that could be something that could lower risk to staff at those facilities if there are more options for the public. As these batteries continue to be more common in the products that people are purchasing, they're going to become more common in our wastes. This graph here is from a study that the EPA did and published in 2021. It looks at wastes that were reported in the news, and it looks like there's essentially an exponential increase in fires at solid waste facilities. However, I think I'd speculate that it might just be that the news is becoming more aware of this and starting to report on it more. I have another study that I just learned about this morning, and I took a screenshot from it. This is not an endorsement of Fire Rover, but Fire Rover is the company that publishes this study. They have firefighting equipment that they'll install at solid waste facilities. And with that equipment that they're installing, they're also keeping track of how frequent the fires are. And so they have data going back from 2016 through 2024 on the frequency of fires at solid waste facilities in both the United States and Canada. And so basically the point of showing this data is that the more options you have for the public to separate out their lithium ion batteries and manage them separately, the lower the chances that you're going to have fires happening at other solid waste facilities. And then one more thing I want to point out, I attended a conference about a month ago for NAMA, the National Association for Hazardous Materials Management. And at that conference, they had somebody from the Clackamas County, Oregon transfer station that was presenting. They had a fire in 2021 that took firefighters, and it was caused by a lithium ion battery. Took firefighters 8 hours to put out, and they ended up installing the Fire Rover system that I was talking about. Again, not an endorsement of Fire Rover, but that Fire Rover system, as I mentioned, it keeps track of how frequent the fires have happened. And from September of 2022 until March of 2025, they had 110 fires. And the person was saying that it averaged out to about 3 to 4 a month that they were seeing occur at their facility. And again, not all of those fires were from lithium ion batteries, but they are one of the more common causes, and just another reason to be trying to manage those separately. if you all are looking for more information on management of lithium ion batteries, the Department of Ecology's Hazardous Waste and Toxics Reduction Program has released some guidance, and there's a link here on the slide that can be provided afterward. The EPA is also working on updating universal waste regulations for lithium ion batteries, and that's just recognizing that those batteries, managing them requires some specific safety considerations. And then lastly, we are well underway into standing up the Washington Battery Stewardship Program. We're working on rule writing now, and we are expecting our first plan proposal to come in 2026 and collection for batteries under the Battery Stewardship Program to start in 2027. And so if your facility ends up taking all of these batteries, there's potential for it to become a Battery Stewardship Program collection site, which could be a potential source of funding for your county. And it could also provide some resources and training for staff members at that site. I think that's my last slide. Yes, it is. Here's my contact information, and I can provide that separately afterward as well. I just want to open it up in case there are any questions.
Ethan, a real quick question. So it's your slide says 2026. With the biennial budget, is there actual funding in the current biennial budget for that? Or, I mean, everything's tight, right? Things are being caught. It's a new program, and I would think that that would be one of the easier cuts. So resources may be training, but I don't, do you see financial resources there at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. So for the battery stewardship law, it's actually a requirement that the producers of the batteries fund the program. And so because the producers of the batteries are the ones funding it, I don't anticipate there being a funding issue with that program.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ethan, I had a conversation with Michelle, and you know what I talked to her about is, you know, our intent isn't to not collect lithium ion batteries at this facility entirely. Right now, we're still trying to get the facility permitted as is. And the reason we've held off and do not want to accept lithium ion at this time is we understand that there's other issues that we need to take care of to be able to make, to safely manage, you know, to manage those things. So we do intend to move forward in that direction, but when we move forward, we want to move forward, and then we can update, that's once the facility is open, then we can update our operations plan, and we have, because we want to make sure that when we do it right, and that we also do it safely, that we're not impacting our neighbors around us, and all of that. So we intend to work with the Department of Ecology and then the industry experts to try to figure out like a best location at our facility, the type of facility, if it needs to be a separated facility, what that needs to look like, all those things. So we do plan on going in that direction. But if I said we were going to do it right now, I guarantee you it would just extend the period of time of getting our facility open. And that's what everybody here, I mean, we've been waiting for this since, 2000, and when did it?
2010 is when.
2010 is when the facility burnt down out at the Horn Rapids landfill. So it's a long time coming, and, you know, we've made mistakes along the way, the county has, and we've tried to learn from those mistakes. But right now, we're focused on just getting this open, collecting those things that we can do safely and that we know, and then adding these other things. We know more legislation is going to come. We're going to have to expand, but we don't want to do anything now that's going to, you know, suspend the opening of this facility later on down the road. We need this facility open now. And so we're just trying to do everything we can to focus on those items that we are going to collect and then later collect lithium. I don't know when that will be, but we just want to make sure that we do it the right way. So that's,
yeah, that makes sense.
Ethan, what was the name of the group you said you weren't endorsing? Fire what?
Oh, Fire Rover.
Rover, thank you.
Yeah, and I told you I just got access to a document this morning. I asked the person who published it if I could share it, and I have permission to share it. So I can forward that on to all of you. It's pretty lengthy, but it has a lot of good information about fire safety at solid waste facilities in general, not just, you know, household hazardous waste facilities or anything like that. So it might be more info than most folks want, but I'd be willing to share it.
I would love to see it. And my second question is, with all of the EVs, and then you have your home mechanics, what are the rules and regulations about car batteries as we go forward? With who
right now,
is in charge of disposing of them and collecting them?
Yeah, right now what we are telling folks is to take the batteries, if they're removing them on their own at home, to the manufacturer. It's the manufacturer's responsibility to dispose of them. We do have, I think, some legislation coming down that will specifically address EV batteries, but nothing at this time that I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Ethan? Ethan, I'd just like to say, yeah, any of the information, your slides, I'm sure everybody would like to have a copy of your slides if they could. So if you could either funnel that to Michelle or whatever, then any other information, like the information you were just talking about that Rebecca would like that, we'll take any of the information you got that you can provide us. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be happy to share it all.
Awesome. Thanks for your time, Ethan.
Thank you.
All right. So let me scroll back down. The next item that we have is the moderate risk waste facility update, permitting and opening. Last meeting, there was a pretty good update from Clayton. We'll just say that right now, the updates that we made to everything are with Ben Franklin Health District and Department of Ecology. I think that was sent to them about 3 weeks ago or better. And so now we're just kind of on the clock with them. Hopefully this is a little bit quicker review because they've already done one review and we can go on from there. So what I try to do is in your packet, there's some exhibits or appendices at the end, and it kind of gives you enough. I've included the information that we sent to them. Mm-hmm. So including the plans, those were. Now I will also say that with the stormwater calcs that were done, it did show to maintain the stormwater, make sure no stormwater, regardless of the facility itself. I think you brought it up, Martin, last time. The stormwater calculations that were done in the past, they were done back by HBR, and I included those in those. Those were specifically just for the upgrades to the building, and that came out with putting in one storm drain right there at the facility, but it didn't. The WACs really call for us to look at the property as a whole. Yeah. So that's what JV Engineers did. And with that, they came up with some drainage swells that needed to be installed out at the facility. And we did that already. So those drainage swells have been put in. And we're also, as we're moving along, we're continuing to do improvements out there. Like we're going to re-rock the area. The drainage swells are going to have rock put in them to make sure that everything looks good and stuff like that. So we're trying to make it presentable. I think we just got some of our new materials in to finish all of the striping that needs to be done out there and put in the symbology that would go in on the pavement and all that. So we're moving forward. Staff is moving forward, really trying to do all of the touch-up work that not only benefits the facility, like putting epoxy coating down on some of the hard surfaces out there, because we will be doing used oil and antifreeze collection out on what used to be the old fueling island. So it'll be very similar. People can pull in and they'll be able to, just like when we had the satellite sites, both in Benton City and in Prosser, they'll be able to do it there. We still have a satellite site at the Horn Rapids facility. They're still collecting oil and antifreeze there. And when we get to the budget, one of the things I'll talk about is the Solid Waste Fund is paying for that collection of the oil, used oil and antifreeze for Richland.
So just is there any estimated completion date on Ecology and Health as far as when they're going to be done with the reviews?
I don't know if Michelle can answer that. What I will say about the Ben Franklin Health District is they're going through some staffing changes. And so we have like three different people now with Ben Franklin Health. But I do get this sense that they're going to rely a lot on Department of Ecology's review. I think theirs is probably for the staff that's there now, mm-hmm. not being fully experienced. I don't want to speak for the Ben Franklin Health District, but that's just the feeling, the sense I get, is they're going to rely pretty heavily on the review by Department of Ecology. So
Michelle, do you have a estimated completion date for your review?
So I'm not the one reviewing, but it is a 45-day review is what they're given. So okay. I think they're a couple weeks into that, so probably another month. But then it goes from them back to Benton Franklin, because ultimately it's still up to Benton Franklin to inform and make those decisions, but Ecology will be giving the guidance on what those decisions look like. And I don't think they've reached out with any additional questions as of yet from Ecology to you guys, but about a month, I would say.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Could I ask a question? It's a little bit of a bird walk, but Franklin County, of course, is looking at this burgeoning population. We need to think about whether we need to expand our HHW facility as is or look at a different model. And I was just curious, when you look at how long it's taken to get the facility you have permitted, how expensive it's been, if you were to go back and do this all again, would you make it outdoor tents where you have lots of ventilation going in and out versus a building? Or do you still think a building is the right way to go?
Are you talking to me, Rebecca?
Well, yeah, I guess so, because really you're kind of the one who's driving the building, and you've seen the Franklin County side.
I think there's a lot of things that you collect at a moderate risk waste facility that need to be protected from the elements. Mixing some of the elements that we get, like rain and stuff, with some of the stuff would be conducive to outdoors. You know, I know that that Chuck has asked this, and I'm putting together a running list, and once we kind of get this open, he kind of like what are things that we've learned and stuff like that. And I haven't turned that, because we're still learning, so I didn't want to give him an incomplete. But I would say, looking back, if I was going to be starting this from scratch, I would have taken advantage of the expertise that we have on the SWAC, first off, on the facility a lot more. And like I said, I wasn't here during the whole, as I go back, I look at the study beginning back in 2012, 2013, where they did a study on locating just where the facility would go. So I wasn't here during all of that, but also when I came in, I'll be honest with you, I'm a little bit ignorant on these types of facilities as well. So it's been a learning process for me. So we made the mistake, I think, me personally, and I'll take responsibility for it. I made the mistake of trusting the people that were here before me, and I'm speaking specifically of Benton County staff. I'm not talking about the SWAC, because it's obvious to me we didn't really utilize the SWAC in key areas, especially guys like Richard Bloom, who have expertise with these types of facilities. So I won't go too deep into that, but I made the mistake of trusting the people before me that they knew what they were doing and that everything was in order. So when we went to get this even permitted the first time, I just assumed the facility was built and the upgrades were perfect and nothing needed to be happened. And it was after that was done that we realized that the ventilation wasn't adequate for the type of stuff we were doing. Now, the ventilation was adequate based on the numbers of moving X amount of, you know, air out of it and circulating it, but it did a bad job because it sucked the air through everybody's breathing zone. And we didn't have the spot ventilation. So I look kind of at that. And also I've made the mistake as I've gone along is not really familiarizing myself 100% with the wax. And I said, and that's really a fault of my own. I spend a lot of time in the wax as they pertain to transportation and the RCWs. Mm-hmm. And I really should have put on that other hat and really studied the wax and had a good understanding. So a lot of these things I probably could have caught early on when I first came here as if I would have familiarized myself with the wax, because a lot of the stuff that we run into, and Michelle can vouch for this, a lot of the comments that we got from Department of Ecology were them just citing the whack. And I know how to read, so it was like, if I would have just read the wax, and then we could have made sure we were doing everything right before we even submitted our ops plan the first time, we would have been a lot better off. So those are the types of delays.
Well, I don't think I'm really trying to point the finger at Benton County's facility. What I'm asking is, you're building this new building because you already had a fire that destroyed the last one. The smart people built a facility and had a fire. And now we're hearing about lithium ion batteries, which are likely to cause fires. And so my question is when you look at the overall plan for dealing with HHW or household hazardous waste, what is the best? Have we had a change in evaluation of what's the best way to handle this? And I think my question is it still buildings, which are certainly more convenient for employees, or is it more open tents that keep you out of the elements but allow a lot of airflow and aren't very expensive if they burn down?
I would say buildings is my opinion. I look at our events where they do set up tents and we rent the tents and they work under them. And a lot of times they are incredibly impacted by the weather, quite a bit. Now, I understand kind of the open air and the airflow and all of that, and there's probably definitely some huge benefit to that, but I mean, elements, I think, are a killer of what it is we're trying to do. And we've seen that at our events where the wind, I mean, I don't care what kind of tent or outdoor buildings, it basically, and the reality of it is if you're collecting certain things, even which I found out is like, even if I'm collecting, if say we wanted to do used flammables, like gasoline, people bring in old gasoline and I want to do that outdoors, I still have to put in the facilities, protective facilities that detect the flames, the gas, and have the ability to put it out. So why not put everything in one building as opposed to having different locations or whatever, where you still have to provide these safety features and then try to supply them in an outdoor thing? Because originally that's what we looked at, is if we're going to collect bulk gas, let's do it outside. And then we found out that you would still have to have the appropriate safety measures installed, like gas detect, the flammable detectors and all of that, because you'd still want to protect it from the environment. So even if you did a lean-to, a three-sided lean-to or whatever, you would still have to provide that. So I would say, from my opinion, I think the county is on the right path. I mean, I would say that it's always easier to build new than it is to try to upgrade an existing facility that was designed originally for something completely different. So that's been a difficult thing as well for us, is trying to turn an old county shop into a moderate risk waste facility, especially when you compare that to like other waste facilities that were built from scratch. And ours operates completely different than like Yakima County. So
given how expensive this is it something that you would open up to a regional area, like charge Franklin County to manage their HHW if they brought it over? This is open-ended questioning. There's no gotchas here. I just, we're looking at Franklin County and thinking our facilities are outdated and they're too small for what they're doing. And what does the path forward look like? And just having been on your SWAC, I know how expensive this is. So
if I may.
What do you think about that?
Just my experience on it, Hanford, we end up with combinations. So depending on your waste stream, tents may be adequate. If you're getting 80% of your stuff, doesn't require any special ventilation, any of the special monitoring, and a tent works, use a tent. And if you need a small hard wall space with all kinds of good stuff in it, put that in there. You don't have to build it for the weakest link or the highest risk. You can split out. Now, I've seen that work at Hanford. I don't know if that would work in your world, and I don't know if that would work actually in this world, but that would be my experience is look at what's your biggest requirement and what's your minimum requirement, and if you can have two different places to go, yippee skippy.
But Rebecca, Michelle, you got your hand up, so let you go.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I don't think tents is going to meet the WAC, but what I would suggest is reaching out to the facility specialist for Eastern and just starting those conversations with them, because I think that would be helpful in understanding what would be required in order to upgrade and make larger. And then in the meantime, it might be helpful to do events. If you're not already doing events, doing an annual event, they can be very expensive, but it can also then show you how much waste is out there and if there is a need for the facility to be larger or maybe more convenient. If you're seeing a lot more MRW coming in through an event, then maybe you need to kind of look at making that facility much larger or making more collection opportunities available to them. That's all I wanted to share.
And what about the regional idea, Matt, as far as would Benton County consider taking Franklin County HHW? Or MRW?
It comes down, Chris kind of said it a little bit, but it really comes down to the space that you have at the facility. But I guess the shorter answer to that is yes. I mean, any agency can go into an interlocal with any other agency to do that. And it's very easy for us to separate costs so that we know that we're not using our grant funds and Benton County funds. So that's, we're all used to doing that anyways through interlocal agreements. So that could be, that definitely is a possibility, but I think the short answer to the issue would be the space that we would have out there. Now, even that, what does that mean? That just means we have more pickups happening. We have them going every 2 or 3 weeks as opposed to every month or month and a half. So that's something that we could look at if Franklin County approached us about it. Absolutely. So, but yeah, unless Michelle thinks there's any issues with that when you're dealing with the grant funding, but she's shaking her head. So
yeah, no, there wouldn't be any issue with that. And, I could help walk you through kind of what it needs to look like, but yeah, it would definitely be doable, but you would want Franklin to definitely have an ILA and probably be paying for that since that's a huge cost.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking, Michelle, I know that the Benton County has used all of their ecology money to fund their facility. Is ecology inclined to support regional facilities? So for instance, if we said, hey, we wanted to throw our lot in with Benton County and Benton County said, yeah, we've got the space, would you throw your money behind that as well? I mean, the grant money that comes.
I mean, the grant money is separate. Franklin has its own money and Benton has its own money. Franklin at this point is not spending their money from my understanding. I'm not their grant manager, but they have not been spending their money. So they have money to spend, but there wouldn't be additional money for a regional option. It would just be you two working together, which is highly recommended. We definitely recommend counties work together as often as possible.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Richard, you got your hand up?
Yeah, I wanted to jump in to one issue that coordinating Franklin County and Benton County is actually the shipment and whether we're changing, whether they'll still be able to manage it under moderate risk waste. The other alternative to building a building, and Chuck will come back and say, we've managed a lot of waste in cargo units, especially designed cargo units, which had the sensing and things of that nature. But that mainly is after they're packing. I guess my question comes down to is, are we planning to, are the staff at the moderate risk waste facility, are they going to be qualified as packers, or are we waiting for the whoever is doing our milk run to pick up the waste? Are they packing it?
Well, the answer to that question is yes, our guys are and are going to be qualified packers, but we all know that when ACT or Clean Harbors, who like Clean Harbors has a proprietary way, so it will go to their facility and they'll go through it and they'll repack it. So we know that's gonna happen. But yeah, all of ours is gonna, most of our facility, majority of it is, the only thing that we added that we're gonna bulk is flammables. But we're not gonna bulk anything else. Like we're not, you know, Yakima County was dumping paint together and we're not gonna be doing any of that. We're just gonna be putting the containers as they come in. We'll be just packed in the drums and in the containers these guys have done all the training.
So basically you're gonna lab pack everything.
Yes. And ACT is part of
segregated lab packs.
Yeah, and ACT, part of their agreement with us is they will come in and they will actually work with our guys the first week or two when we open to assist them to ensure that there's not really any issues with the package or whatever. So these guys have gone through all of the available training and then some, but also ACT will come in and will be there to assist as necessary. So we're taking every option available to us to ensure that our guys are comfortable and doing everything the right way. So
I guess the other little piece of the puzzle I just found was supposedly Lowe's and Home Depot will take some of the lithium batteries as well. So I'll try and if I get more mobile, I'll try and stop by Home Depot or Lowe's, one of my many trips, and see what they won't accept. Lowe's will accept larger batteries, but I think that's mainly they're going to limit those to the brands that they currently sell. So if you bought it at Lowe's, you can return it at Lowe's type of thing.
Yeah, I know with the batteries for my power tools, Home Depot there in Richland is close to my place. I buy most of my stuff there. I actually take my lithium-ion batteries to them and recycle them there at Home Depot. So, and then I go in and buy new ones. So they're happy to sell the new ones to me. So as I found, though, Richard, that it's actually cheaper just to buy brand new tools with the batteries than it is to buy the batteries separate. So I got spares of every tool if you need them.
I agree. But no, and so there's some other options available to people than the batteries plus. But we probably need to quantify that. But still, I think as you said before, in the long term, we would want to start collecting or accepting lithium batteries. The only downside I would see is we really want, because of their risk, we would want to envision that being separate from our building. And I would suggest, some sort of modified Connex type of approach. Anyway.
How big of lithium ion batteries would you be looking at accepting?
Well, I think the biggie is like for the power tools and people who like those types of batteries.
Because you have car battery size lithium ions. Yeah. You have on the boats, like bass boats, you have very large lithium ion battery packs. Now, if they're tolling motors and you're seeing some bigger batteries, at the consumer level showing up,
yeah.
would you have plans to accommodate them?
Go ahead.
No, go. I have no idea.
From what I understand from going to a battery symposium mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff is he's right. Keep them out of your building, first off, but we're also just a household. So I think that like the car batteries and stuff like that, like they were saying earlier, that's going to go back to the producers. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the biggest battery that I see is taken is like the batteries for like bicycles, you know, that you
the big, right, big,
yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. And I just don't see car batteries coming to a household.
Yeah. You don't see bigger battery
pack. I just don't see it. I think that's something.
What are these people going to do?
I think that they have to go back to the actual manufacturer, and the producer is probably going to have to, especially if it's for an electric motor or you know something like that that's larger, like a boat or a car. I think it's going to happen.
And then you also have the lithium ion batteries showing up at households now using solar panels on that too.
Yeah.
For storage.
You know, that's probably a good question for Michelle because there's so many different new batteries and new technology that's coming out right now. This is going to be a constant changing thing, you know, with batteries. So I'm not sure on that.
And I'll
jump in here real quick and suggest and what one of the cutoffs is for Home Depot or is nothing over a 300 watt battery that becomes a large battery. And so we may consider either setting a weight limit for the battery as being what we, because you can get, you can scale weight of a battery to wattage or risk associated with it. You know, I have dealt with a lot of lithium and sodium and alkali metals in my career, and they're lithium. There's only one firefighting mechanism that you don't have, which is carbon microspheres. You bury it in carbon. You can't even bury it in sand because it'll melt through the sand. Anyway,
Yeah, and so, I mean, again, with lithium ion, we want to head that direction. We just want to make sure we do it right, and I want some of the information. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the companies, and I guess I could Google it, too, on ones that actually have. We do have Connexes out at the facility, but, you know, even if we use those Connexes, right now they sit on kind of the boundary of our property.
Well, no, the Connexes I'm talking about have been modified for waste storage, so yeah, they have secondary containments in them and detection.
Yeah, that's why I said
I make a suggestion here, because we're already an hour into the meeting. Unless there's something really urgent, and Rebecca, I appreciate the rabbit hole, but
I appreciate that. Yeah,
yeah.
So I'll go quick. But I did want to go this because there was some discussion about the next item is the budget, the fund. I provided some of the same information, but I did add another staff summary sheet. And I was looking through what I think I sent everybody, and I was missing one of the documents. So I'll bring that. I'll share to the screen to bring that up. I don't know. Yeah. So you did get that. I did include that. And it's pretty small. But I did want to be able to go through there and kind of break it down. But one of the big things is when we look at, we do have fee assessments here. And when we went through the update of our plan, starting in 2026, we can go to the board through the ordinance process for them to increase what I refer to as tipping fees, but those are fee assessments for this on the solid waste collection. We intend to do that in accordance with the information we received back from the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission, UTC. But the other primary source of funding for the solid waste, of course, is the LASWFA grant, which is the Local Solid Waste Financial Assistance Grant Program. And of course, that's administered by the Washington State Department of Ecology. Right now, we're still working under the 2023-2025 LSWFA grant, which is the grant portion is a little over $512,000, so 512,040.5. And that comes with a county city match of $170,680.17. And so the calculation for the match contribution by the counties and cities is based on population. And the current breakdown that we're using is what I have listed there. Hopefully I don't need to go through that completely, but it shows you what the cities and counties are, what their match is. So, and of course, City of Kennewick has the majority of it at 40%. So
stupid Kennewick.
Yeah. And so let me go ahead and just share. That way it's up there for everybody. Share my screen here. And then, of course, he leaves. No, he doesn't even have it up. Well, I'll just come. He needs to allow me to share my screen.
Oh, man.
All right. So that kind of shows the breakdown. Again, what I did is because city and county budgets are interesting, and every city and every county budgets differently. So I made the mistake of just providing everybody a breakdown that you can kind of see here. And during the last discussion, I wasn't here. I know there was some confusion about like what supplies are and services and stuff like that. And so, but you can see that the solid waste budget is the total expenditures is at 1.9. And I was really trying to show that as relationship to with the previous one of how much we're getting in grant funding, which is that 500 some thousand. And then with the 170,000 match from the cities and the county, you can kind of see there's a lot more to it than just the grant funding and what everybody pays. And I've made a pledge to the cities that I'm going to do everything I can to try to use the tipping fees that we collect to subsidize all of these other things we want to do above and beyond. But you can see that there's really not even enough money from the grant, which we appreciate the grant, Michelle, don't get me wrong, to really operate the moderate risk waste facility on an annual basis. And you can kind of see that here when you see this is just for the operation budget. And of course, this is for 2 years. So I don't want to say it's right out about $500,000 a year. And so we do have some extra money, but like I said, we're not open yet, so we're not totally sure. This is based on us talking to other counties and how many shipments they do on an annual basis and the cost of those. So we think that we compared to comparable counties population-wise, so we think we have a pretty good budget there. So that's really why I kind of just showed those originally. But as I go into this one here, this is the breakdown, and this is what we really are, what we really submit. Let me try to get this to a size that people can read. So, you know, the top part, you can see and this is for a 2-year period. So I want to make sure we are a biennial budget here in Benton County. So everything you see in here is for that 2 years.
And Matt, the question I did have though was, what is the difference between baseline budget and department interim?
Well, here in this county, even though this is a special revenue fund,
right?
They still down at the commissioner side, they still require us to, they provide us with our baseline budget, which is based on previous biennial budget. And then we have to request increases to that budget. It's an odd way to do it for special revenue funds because we're supposed to not just break even, but actually have cash carry over from 1 year to the next. And we also know that there's times when grant funding can go up and down. And so things change. So, but that's what the baseline is. That's what we receive from our county administration, the financial manager for the county. And that's really based on kind of that's what they give us based on the previous. But they do calculate why you see some of them being the same is they provide us our labor and benefits numbers and they do all the calculations for us and submit it. So, but what's important is the budget that was approved is the department entry budget. And so I know that can be somewhat confusing, but just quickly going down through here, I know there was some questions about, professional services and, also there was some question about like the fenced items and stuff like that. So utilities is, you can see at least the breakouts on utilities and rentals. And so I think I hope this is more what the SWAC, the committee was asking for. And then we can do that. But yes, it is odd here in Benton County. It's a little different where they have like they call it a fenced item contingency. In the bars manual or the accounting manual that we're all supposed to follow, that's what we would call an ending fund balance, beginning fund balance. The reason this one is specifically fenced is this is set aside and we have to get board approval to tap into it because that's consistent with our closure plan of the facility. We have to have a certain amount of money that is set aside and specifically for that. So in this case, it does make sense to have a fenced item contingency and we set that at $200,000.
So in my world, I call it a reserve account.
It is a reserve account. Okay. I was going to set up a separate line because there are lines in BARS accounting that you can have reserved. This county doesn't use those for some reason. Right. They don't use like beginning fund balance and funding balance because in your beginning and ending, you can have reserved, you can have unreserved, you can have. They don't do that here. So I've had to learn how to do the accounting the Benton County way coming from Franklin County where we followed the BARS manual 100%. So that's why I understand it can be confusing. It was incredibly confusing to me coming here. So, but some of the major items like professional services, that right there is what we anticipate like with ACT over the 2-year period. Of them providing the services, the professional services of doing all of the hauling and the stuff. Other than that, everything else I think is pretty close. We have operating supplies. We part of operating this because we are a packing facility. These guys have to buy every 55-gallon drum that leaves. We don't get it back. So when they leave, ACT brings us new ones and we pay for those drums, those 55-gallon drums. So that's, or we can go with any, we don't have to have ACT do it. We actually are going to find a place that we can get the absolute best price we can for 55-gallon drums. So that's something I'm not incredibly, but we've talked to other facilities and that's just the way they operate. They usually Clean Harbors or whoever they contract with brings drums. They tell them how many drums to bring with them. And so a lot of counties operate the same way. So that's why you see kind of high numbers there at operating supplies. Supplies would just be normal office supplies, toilet paper, cleaning stuff for the wash, those types of things. So I think the other, do you remember, Chuck, one of the other big items that you all had kind of questions about?
Chris answered my other one.
What are the associations that you belong to? What the association dues?
They belong to, like all of us here in the county belong to one of the state associations. So theirs is the Washington State Association of Solid Waste Managers. And the counties actually pay a fee, like we do it for WASACE, which is the Association of County Engineers. You also have county officials, and those are annual memberships that we all pay. So it'd be for stuff like that, and then any other memberships that they would belong to as part of, like,
you can belong to NAMA. But we don't belong right now. I get enough information from WASAC and stuff like that for the time being. But NAMA is definitely a good resource.
And the beautiful thing about belonging to those associations is, like, I know with the Washington State Association of Solid Waste Managers, that they discuss, and they actually have kind of some input on some of the legislation that comes down. We do respond to certain legislation. They have quarterly meetings, annual meetings, and stuff like that. So that's really what that's for. Those types of things. And I think that's just an assessed fee, and that goes out to every county. And I believe that's based on population as well. So let me see here if there's any.
What are the two different organizations in the organization columns? One ended in 3710 and one ended in 4910. I just see duplicates of some of the items in these different organization types.
Where are you at?
So, organization type is this column here. And there's some things that, like, temporary help, for example, shows up twice. And there's some other things that are showing up twice in
the column. That's kind of the, when you see, like, the organization type, that's our organization number. They have different objects. And then sometimes they like to break things up on based on different accounting. But we don't separate it out here. Like, you might see that. More where you might have temporary help that's working, does work in this area, and they would charge out to that area or they would charge out to another area. We don't really anticipate a lot of temporary help, but we've looked at what happens if, for example, Chris is on vacation and then somebody calls in sick. We have one person out there. The reason we did put temporary help in there is kind of more of a billing item. It's not an individual, but we have talked about even training some of our engineering staff, having them go through the full training. That if we get in those situations until we can build up the fund to hire that fourth person. And even then, the fourth person I'd look at hiring would probably be a part-time employee anyways. It's like a 20-hour a week employee. And so yeah, that's kind of a placeholder for us. Because like you said, in the county, this being a special revenue fund, every bit of the money we have that's in there, all the revenue is spendable for the purpose, the lawful purpose that it's for. But in Bend County, they make us actually do what they call line item transfers all over the place. And so it's very cumbersome process. So it's sometimes good to have placeholders in there that you can, you know, that you can pay out of. But yeah. So it
performed by other departments.
Yeah, we would bill for the time. Yeah.
Have you ever been transfers?
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
They got converted all to federal speak.
Yeah.
Weird.
And so that's where you see it down here. You see it down here again, where you see the temporary help.
Yeah.
And down towards the bottom. So yeah, it's. Yeah. And then, of course, all the assessments. So here they call them assessments. I call them rental rates on vehicles and equipment and all the internal services like IT and all that. They call them assessments. But they're, yeah. So that's what all that for. The other thing is, too, is like I said, we are, City of Richland is collecting used oil, collecting used antifreeze. They pay that in advance. They send us an invoice. We then reimburse the City of Richland for those costs out of the solid waste fund. So that's also in here as well. So we include that as part of the thing. Other things that are spent out of this fund are some of the cleanup that happens that is not directly related to the moderate risk waste facility, but is directed to cleaning up hazardous waste, or, you know, because we have people that literally have dumped, I don't know how much oil just into the ditch of our road. Yeah. And that's when we have to call up somebody like Clean Harbors or ACT to go out there and actually clean that up, remediate that area. So, and all that comes out of the solid waste fund as well. So,
Suzanne, when you're talking here on the total match by population, Richland is 29%. What's Richland paying us for then? What I'm hearing you say right now is, we pay them.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I'm a little confused then. What do they do for, why would they give us $50,000?
Yeah, it's one of those weird things where
they have to pay grant match.
Yeah.
But then if there's some other service that's.
They're paying their share of it. Yeah. And then what happens is we're then paying them money back for some of the services they're providing, where theoretically we could offset that and they could.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. So that's just their share of it. That's just their match. So really, from that standpoint, it's the moderate risk waste facility. Because at the end of the day, the moderate risk waste facility is going to cost about $500,000 or more, a little more to do over the 2-year period. And we get about $500,000 in grant money, then the match money. So we anticipate that just the grant and the match should be able to operate the moderate risk waste facility. Then the rest of the money we get in is just really for other cleanup. And we do plan on running events. Like I talked about in the past, we want to have money in there to do those, still do those events. Now, whether or not they're coinciding with each city, because I believe we need to do some of those for Benton City and for Prosser. And so I'm looking at doing more small, isolated, like West Richland. I know they have an Earth Day. They just had it in April. They do that at Enterprise Middle School. And I want to be able to get with the city of West Richland in the future and actually maybe have a moderate risk collection working with ours out there that would then be paid out of the solid waste fund here in the county. So, but because we're doing those types of things, wanted to isolate those, we would prefer that not be that all the other cities right. be paying for that. So we have to balance out, make sure that everything balances out. But that's kind of our goal forward. So all I'll say so that we can kind of move on is if anybody has any questions, hopefully it's a little
that really more, helped a lot and answer a lot of my
and questions. If anybody has any other questions, we just send them to me and I'll do my best to answer them. Kind of getting back to the agenda, I think that was it from that standpoint. So now it's down to, unless anybody has any questions on what we went through with the budget, I'm going to move on to member comments. Does anybody have anything before we?
For the city of Kennewick, the interlocal agreement is expiring in December. So have the discussions begun between the various, cities as far as what the next interlocal is going to look like yet?
Yeah, we're starting those now. Jackie Mayfield is working on those. We have some changes to our membership on TLAC too. And so she was kind of waiting. So I think we have three changes. One is I think it's Kara, who's now the new representative with the conservation district. And then of course the changeover at WM. So
yeah,
we'll be going to the board with those designations. I think our plan is we submit it. It'll be not next Tuesday, but I think it's going to be the first Tuesday in June because they don't meet after Memorial Day. So okay. And we'll get that all caught up. But
and then this is really parochial. I had a constituent call me up saying, hey, how do I manage my cooking oil in my house, household cooking oil? And there used to be drums at our transfer station that you put in, but that contractor pulled out without any information. And I contacted waste management, got a lot of super good help. And essentially, if anyone ever asks you, throw in some kitty litter and throw in your cooking oil, and waste management's good with it.
Richland is taking cooking oil. Right when they take their motor oil, they have a setup for cooking oil.
Oh, good. So, okay.
I didn't think about that, but our facility, we could do the same thing. So, like right now, the facility for that is an outdoor, but we got the huge sheds that have, each one of them fits how many 55-gallon drums?
Four on each side.
Four on each side.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And so,
I'll pass that on.
So we could do that. I appreciate you bringing that up because I didn't think about country a lot.
And then just last question, since our next meeting's in July, ecology should be done with a review by mid to end of June. So we should have a better idea as far as an opening date potentially with the
And the only comments I want to make, and I know that everybody's going to blame me for going long today through the map. The one that Matt runs was incredibly long. But it's part of my member comments. I know some of the things in the last meeting that were brought up were, getting information out to the public. Mm-hmm. And we do have a really good communications director here at the county, and we're working. Her name is Katie. And we're working with Katie to really do a revamp of our website and then working on all of the spots, radio spots and all that. And then, we will work. She will be reaching out to setting up like ribbon cutting and that. So one of the things we're kind of working on is we're thinking about maybe doing a soft opening where we actually allow like the cities, like I know like city main, some of those things where we can kind of do, even though it's supposed to be household, but we can keep that separate, but it gives our guys an opportunity so that we're,
practice
the stuff. So we're just kind of, that's one of the things that we're kind of, how do we do a soft opening from that standpoint and then do the ribbon cutting. So there's a few things, but we're looking at totally revamping our website and having all the information that not only that we have, like we have certain things in our operations plan that call out where we're going to direct people to for certain stuff. We want that to be there so people don't have to dig through our ops plan to find it and stuff. But all of those pertinent documents will be available to the public as well. So I did want to reassure everybody that we are doing that so that when we get to the point of opening, we want to go live with our website. And then these guys were looking at flyers so that when people come in, they're handing those out to people with all kinds of information on them and stuff. The other thing, when people do deliver, we kind of revamped our system. We use Survey 123 for when we've added, when we just collect at the normal collection events, we just track where they're from. Here, we're not only tracking where they're from, but we're actually, these guys will weigh from each vehicle, and then in the system, they'll put the weight. So then we can track the weight for each jurisdiction.
Oh,
and so I think that will give us a good idea. Plus, it's good information for us to have for our reporting Department of Ecology. And I see, Michelle, you got your hand up, so I'll shut up and let you provide a member's comment.
No worries. I just wanted to say that we had the Organic Summit, and I didn't see some of you there, but I would like to bring a member from our organics team in July to speak to you guys, because they are coming out with some new information as far as the waivers are going to go. And as a reminder, starting in 2027, Kennewick, Richland, and unincorporated portions of Benton County will be required to offer source-separated organics. And then in 2030, it's required to be mandated service, including food waste. So those are huge changes to you guys. I know I spoke to the cities in the past, and we discussed the exemption process and the waivers. There wasn't much information, but now there is some information, and it will be kind of important information to know and be working towards as we get closer to those waivers. So if you could put me on in July for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Great. Thank you, Michelle.
Yep.
All right. Do we have any other member comments? All right, hearing none, it's just the date of our next meeting, which is July. Bring it up. So would that be
9?
Would that be July 9th? So our next meeting is July 9th at 10 a.m. And somebody else, either Richard will be leading it, so we might be able to get done in an hour.
And we probably ought to put a new, who's going to be the chairperson on the agenda too.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Anybody got anything else before we close the meeting?
I want to thank you for holding it for me.
Thanks, Richard. Well, we just want you to get well, get through whatever you're going through, and get back. So we appreciate you. I appreciate everybody showing up. And with that, it is unfortunately 11:27, and we'll close the meeting.